get everybody's attention, I hope. With that, thanks for coming to House Finance on the 21st or 22nd of March.
We're very popular today, aren't we?
Say again?
We're very popular.
I believe we probably are popular, some ways more than others. As most of you that are here, you're probably looking through this packet of amendments. And where's my amendment here? Why am I not in it? This is just the first packet, so don't be overly concerned until we gavel out, and then when we move the bill, then you can be concerned whether your amendment is in it or not. With that, I'll start the meeting. It is 1:50 today. With us, we have Representative Holmes, Representative Foster, Representative Croft, Representative Jewell, Representative Wyrock, Representative Hawker, Vice Chair Stoltz, Co-Chair Meyer, Co-Chair Chenault, and also Representative Kelly. It is our intent to proceed down through this list of amendments one by one. The majority of these are not necessarily dealing with money, but dealing with language changes and other issues that we've seen pop up in each of the individual departments. What I would ask is that any of the amendments that any of the chairmen or the subcommittees have offered, that they ask to have those brought forward, and then we can do the vote on the agenda. With that, I think that's all that I have to start with. And the majority of these deal with House Bill 67. There are transportation issues and other issues that are 66. I believe that we have adopted the CS for that bill in front of us. So with that, Representative Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, just a couple of hilltop issues, being a new fellow that was given a couple of subcommittees and had some motions to go in that are essentially from the governor. And I shall do that. And perhaps we'll take a brief at ease down the trail a ways, but I kind of anticipate there will be some additional amendments from committee members relative to some of these areas. Are those to be saved until we've taken care of the governor and the obvious ones?
It is our plan right now, Representative Kelly, to go through this list. We already have amendments for from probably for every department, a lot of different topics that are either amendments that we didn't agree, or, you know, we looked at and said that we didn't want to start them, and so we've asked to go to other committee members to see if they were sponsoring. There's also individual amendments from the different committee members and from other members of our body, as far as amendments I'd like to see. Those are being put together and divided up into which departments that they go to. And, you know, so we're looking at all of those amendments. We plan on probably bringing most of those amendments forward tomorrow. We have some talks with some other people that we're currently engaged in today at times. As those amendments are brought forward, we'll vote on them. I don't suspect that we won't take this bill out of committee tomorrow. We'll have Easter break. We'll come back and we'll probably, and in my mind, we'll just have a committee next week.
Okay, I just, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to make sure. So it sounds like I've got another kick at the cap.
I wouldn't say that.
How about a bite at the apple?
There you go.
Yeah, because I
have my heart of coffee.
Okay, well, let's move on.
And
as you will, Representative Kelly.
Specifically, I just want to weigh in that I've got a couple of concerns about the university that I've mentioned to you, but when it's time for me to bring those up, if you just kind of pull on your ear or something, I will certainly bring
them up. I think we've had that discussion.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
With that, we will go to the amendment package. And I would move amendment one. Hold on a second.
I'll object for description.
Yeah, I knew you would, Representative Stoltz. Basically, this is carried forward language, and I may have someone from admin, or maybe I ought to have one of my staff come up, and she can explain it a lot better than I can.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Sharon Kelly. I'm staff to Representative Chenault. The amendment that you have in front of you, labeled DOA-1, is carry forward language both for centralized administrative services and leases. There is an explanation on the amendment, and the department is requesting carry forward language for these services. The rates charged for services to other state agencies are required to be negotiated with the federal government as part of the cost allocation plan. Standard language in these plans requires the rates to take into account prior years over and under collections. In most states and with several programs within the state of Alaska, programs of this nature operate within an internal service fund, and the fund's balance allows the department to adjust the rates in subsequent years to ensure the funds collected are adequately are utilized appropriately. When the rates operate as part of the GF, budgetary carry forward is required to accomplish the same objective.
Representative Stoltz.
I remove my objection.
Okay. Representative Cross.
Yeah. Well, I'll object just to ask, but I'm just curious. Okay, because it's only if all you're asking for is the carryover of interagency receipts, so it's this ongoing paying for services out, and if you don't do this, you can't sort of bill correctly as we go over the fiscal year.
That's my understanding through the chair.
That makes sense. Okay, I don't have any objection to that.
Are there any other objections to amendment number one? Seeing none, we'll move to amendment one. And we'll move to amendment two, and I will.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move amendment number two.
I'll object just for confirmation. Sharon, since you're here, would you explain that also?
Mr. Chairman, this is a correction of a funding source for FY06 credit card rebates for which no contractual spending restrictions exist. It's a technical change.
Representative Crowley.
It's a technical change, but it adds to GF. What credit card rebates? Why is it costing them? For which no contractual spending restrictions exist. I understand those individual words. I don't understand how they form a sentence.
Through the chair, Representative Croft, I may need a little assistance from Legislative Finance with this.
This is one of those credit cards we get cash back for credit on purchase.
Right. And I believe, as David will explain it, I think it has to do with they're not able to utilize their cash back. But I'll let David explain. David
Teal, Legislative Finance.
No.
Correct, Mr. Chairman. The requirements for statutory designated program receipts is that they be contractually restricted for a specific purpose. These are received from a third party, which is another requirement, but there's no contractual requirement built into the credit card contract. It's just a rebate. The state can use it in any way it chooses. It's essentially general funds.
We're getting this money. We want to spend it in centralized administration, but we put the wrong label on it.
Correct. It's like having your American Express card or Discover card or something that gives you a rebate, and you get your money coming in, and you can do whatever you want with it.
and we're proposing this to, it is being spent in centralized administrative services. We just have to give the right code for what it is as it comes in.
Correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? I'll remove my objection. Are there any other objections? Seeing that none, Amendment 2 is so moved. Mr. Kosher?
Mr. Chairman, I move Amendment number 3.
Any objections? This basically is a technical correction of funding sources for FY06 retirement system cost increase. Seeing no objections,
Chairman.
Oh, excuse me, Representative Hawker.
You know, I think we've got a number of these similar adjustments here. Can we give a better explanation of why the error was made in the first place? Or what are we technically correcting?
Sure. Do you have an answer to that, or are you going to bring David up?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to call a friend if Mr. Thiel could come up.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hawker, a lot of these technical amendments are caused, or the root of them is the PERS costs. The governor originally submitted language which would have used FY05 money to pay these costs. Delivered a series of transactions to us, but because they're in the language section of the bill, the subcommittees didn't concern themselves with that, and it would have been horribly confusing if they had. But then, as the agencies make amendments to the numbers section of the bill, and then we put all of the PERS transactions into the numbers section, found out there were a number of errors, small errors like this, in coding those PERS things. It sometimes added money, in this case, money that couldn't be used for the purpose that it was intended when they gave us the original PERS transaction. We fixed it. They tried to fix it in subcommittee, and we ended up fixing it twice and going from zero to negative, which we cannot do in the bill, put it back in, and now we ended up with money in there that we didn't want. So we're now fixing it the third time, and we hope this is it.
Again, this is in the original draft of House Bill 67. These PERS activities, and they were funded in the language section. We've now, and again, I know this because I know it's not there, you've moved the funding from language into the numbers section of the bill. And this is just the cleanup of that transition.
Correct.
And you'll, that's all we need to know.
You'll see half a dozen of them.
Any other objections? Seeing none, we'll move Amendment DOA number 3. Representative Kelly.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. I would move the Commerce Amendment number 1.
Object.
Representative Croft.
Just object. I'd like an explanation of it. I see what it does, but okay. Why do we not want to limit it?
I was going to let you ask the question. Sharon, would you like to explain, or David?
Mr. Chair, Representative Croft, this replacement language allows the agency to carry forward the entire unexpended and unobligated balance. The deleted language limits the department's carry forward to $2 million of the business license receipts and corporate receipts. There was another amendment that was not as clear as this with the deletion and the cleanup. This makes the language in the bill very clear as to their ability to carry forward the entire unexpected and unobligated balance. And it doesn't include the capital funds, is that?
No. This is all business license.
Okay. There was a capital.
Representative Crowe.
Well, yeah, I'm clearly missing something. I mean, we budget for what we expect them, what we think it's appropriate for them to spend in the coming fiscal year. I understand the source, and the source is estimated to be more than $2 million, to be $279.7 $2,279,700. But it could be 2.5, and it might be 3, and it could be less. Why wouldn't we budget for this agency the appropriate amount we want them to spend? And if we collect more business license receipts, they would go into the general fund. It may be okay to give them $279,000 more than we were, but to give them an asterisk amount that could be $500,000 more or $1 million more, I'm not sure whether that's prudent.
Mr. Chair, I can respond to that if you like.
Please.
Representative Croft, the Qualified Trade Association contract still gets to spend $2 million of business license receipts. That's in the appropriation in the number section, which you can't see on this amendment, but that is unchanged. If they have general funds as well as business license receipts, they're able to spend. But there is no other carry forward language for business license receipts in the bill. But there's approximately $300,000 worth of unspent business license receipts from FY05. By changing this language, we're simply saying, in QTA, go ahead and spend the carry forward first, all your FY05 carry forward, and someone else can spend the 06 revenue, so that you're not spending any more money during 06, but you have approximately $300,000 that you would be able to carry forward into 07. And again, used for any purpose. Otherwise, it would fall to the general funds, and then you'd be asking for a general fund appropriation.
Okay. The effect of this is not to spend any more in 06, but to start 07 with an additional carry forward.
Correct.
And the idea is, David, that we want as much as possible of the business license receipts to go into the Qualified Trade Association, and that's preferable to lapsing it in the general fund, because
through the chair, that's just a request that the agency's made. They do have unused business license and corporate receipts. The reason for that is the corporation section just moved together, we moved divisions.
Right.
And we now added the corporate fees to the business license receipts. They had several hundred thousand, I think in fact $1 million or so, of corporate receipts that they don't typically spend and that normally lapse to the general fund. There was a shortage in the agency of just the business license receipts. By rolling the corporate receipts and business license receipts together, he eliminated that shortage. In fact, gave them a surplus,
which will carry forward into 07.
Carry forward into 07.
Right. I'm still not. I'm sure I understand the public policy choice, but I'll remove my objection to the amendment.
Are there any other objections? Seeing none, then we will adopt amendment number CLM1, if there is no objection. Seeing none, we will go to amendment number 2. Representative Kelly?
Mr. Chairman, I move Commerce Amendment 2.
And I will object to that. Brief overview of what this amendment does.
Mr. Chairman, this creates a new appropriation of the Community Development Quota Program. Right now, the CDQ and banking programs are indistinguishable, and so they can move the monies back and forth. creating this new appropriation allows that the monies for community development quota program are used for that program and not for other programs.
Any questions? Any objections? Seeing none, we will adopt amendment number 2 and move to amendment number 3. Representative Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, I move Commerce Amendment 3.
And are there any objections?
You don't want to?
I can if you want me to.
I'll sure, yeah. Go ahead, yeah.
Okay.
Why are you objecting?
Representative Croft, did you have a question?
I just am asking for an explanation.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Croft, this position, this money, it's 109.9 from receipt-supported services, is to create a position that consults directly with the Commissioner on high-profile CDQ group policy issues. It's the point person on the CDQ program.
One more full-time position?
Yes.
Okay. I'll remove your objection.
Representative Meyer.
I'll yield to
Representative
Hawker.
Representative Hawker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a query. This seems to be a pretty, just call it an ordinary sort of activity here. How could this not get brought up in the regular subcommittee process and addressed there? And then I guess the next question is, do we have the endorsement of the subcommittee chairman?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hawker. Representative Kelly is the chairman of the subcommittee.
Representative Kelly. Mr. Chairman, we did a lot of things, and I'm trying to remember exactly what this one was, but I believe what it was we eliminated or denied this position, and then we're given a compelling defense of adding this position, and at that time then went back in and asked, is there somewhere where you can find these funds where we can make a trade? And I think we've got someone here, if you want more information than that, who can see. Jo Ellen's here. Mr. Chairman, I would ask that she step forward, and I'm sure she'll recall with the passion she had for that addition exactly what we did here.
Please come forward.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Joellen Hanrahan, Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. This position is the a CDQ manager. Our CDQ program has grown rapidly over time. They have surpassed $300 million in assets and have generated over $500 million in revenue. We need a type of person now that has a level of management ability that is above and beyond what was previously needed. This position is responsible for technical analysis of large and complex and substantial amendments with the CDQ groups in the range of $10 to $20 million. They oversee proceeds to be into IPOs, highly valued IPOs. CDQ manager will be a key player in representing Alaska's needs in the new Magnuson-Stevens Act reauthorization process that begins in March 2005. That act and its potential changes has significant implications for the CDQ program and for Alaska fisheries. We feel it's imperative for the state to be positioned to have input into and be ready to assume new responsibilities that will result from the changes in that act. One of the changes that is anticipated is that there will be an increased role for the state with the CDQ groups. We believe that this is critical positioning for us at this time to address the advanced and complex issues that have risen with the growth of the CDQ program and to place us in a positive position going into the Magnuson-Stevens Act reauthorization process. This is, I will note, this is a fee-generated program, and if we don't collect fees, we don't, we, and we this is also tied to the previous amendment that you just moved, so it will be very clear whether we have money to pay for positions or not.
And I think that was the intent there, was to try to clarify the line and where that money actually came from, if I'm not correct. But Representative Hopper.
That would have been exactly where I was going to ask for clarification. And can you even a little bit more clearly for me, speak slowly, I'm a little slow on this one. This is out of this new program. What if, is there any doubt you'll have sufficient receipts to fund this position?
There's not doubts that we'll have receipts to fund the position.
There is not. There's no doubt there will be adequate. There will be adequate receipts.
There will be adequate
Thank
receipts
you very much.
To fund the position.
Representative Meyer?
Yeah, if I may, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Unlike my colleague here from Anchorage, we're not used to all this fishing stuff. Maybe you can explain what this program is
sure.
and what this new new act that passed, and we're hiring this person in anticipation of this, something that this act is going to be. Can you fill me in just briefly?
Representative Meyer, through the chair, the program was developed in 1992. It's the Community Development Quota Program. It is in Western Alaska, and it was developed to increase the economic development and respond to fishing issues in the area. Since that time, those community development quota groups, they're allocated quotas of fisheries throughout the season. They have quote, it started with one. I think it started with pollock, and they now do a Pacific cod and crab vessels and other quota on fisheries. And I wish there was someone else here to speak more clearly about the beginnings of the program. Since I'm new to the department, I'm just coming in at this point.
That's fine. Tell me about the act that just passed in that affects us and why
we
got that hired.
The Mangus and Stevens Act is it's an act that has been passed before, and it's up for reauthorization. And the reauthorization process will start in March 2005. And that act has significant implications on our regional councils for fishing and other Alaska fisheries.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, have we already hired this person?
Well, because we believe this is a critical situation that we want to be prepared for the Mangus and Stevens, we have left the position vacant and hired this position on. And we have left the position vacant in order that we were able to do that within our fees for this year.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And then if I may just finish up, and then so there's no chance of general funds being used for this position.
Representative Meyer, through the chair, no, this is a fee program. It is definitely paid by the fee from the community development quota groups.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to wrap this one up and make sure my deal with you is, as we said, you didn't fill a position in the vacancy. Instead, we put this position back in. You used that receipt funding to fund this position. Is that where
we use that receipt funding to fund this position, and in exchange for this, we gave $200,000 in another area.
So, to Representative Hawker and Representative Meyer's concerns, I'm sure this doesn't just go back in and reflect an addition to the budget, but rather the department came back and said what we were so interested in this position that we want to forego filling this other one, and that's the deal we made. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Question.
Representative Hawker?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, that raises another question. If we had a budgeted vacant position, why are we incrementing the budget?
Representative Hawker, through the chair, it's anticipated that throughout the next year, that if the changes are implemented with the Mangus and Stevens Act, that we will need to fill that other position. We will not be filling a position if we don't have the fees to do so.
Any other questions?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, what is CQE?
CDQ is the community...
CQE.
Oh, CQE. Representative Weirach, through the chair, CQE is the community quota entity program. And that is replicating the CDQ program in other areas of the state. We're attempting to replicate it because this program has been so successful.
Did that confuse you more than what you already were?
No, I'm just thinking why about this unfilled position that was already funded. Why do we need to? I don't think that was the answer.
Representative Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, I am wondering, too, if that was answered. Because as I understood it, what we were going to do would not involve, whether our receipt services or otherwise, adding another position, but rather foregoing filling, using another vacant position. And it sounded as if what we actually have, ignoring for a moment where the money came from, put this position back in and still intend to fill the other position as well. So without saying where the funds came from, I'm wondering if we are where we thought we were going to be.
Representative Kelly, through the chair.
Is it right that, don't we have a CDQ coordinator right now on staff in the department? So they've always been on staff. And and I understand that this is a new position because of the reauthorization work that's going to take place and the complexity that's grown. There's going to be an additional level of expertise that's necessary for both the federal reauthorization and the levy added complexity and the new position that was going to be added with 101.9. Is that what you're going to go on?
Representative Weirach, through the chair, yes, that is what's going on. The position that managed the program previous to this was a development specialist position at a lower level. We believe where the program has grown to at this point and what we need to address in the next year and the results that we will need to implement as a result of the change in the menus and Stevens Act, we needed a higher level position to deal with those issues and to represent Alaska to help ensure that our changes in life happened.
Any other questions or comments? I'll remove my objection. Are there any objections to adopting amendment number 3? If not, amendment 3 is adopted. Next, we will go to DEED number 1.
Move DEED 1, Mr. Chair.
I'll object, Mr.
What?
Co-chair.
That's good enough. get along. Mr. Chairman, a lot of times when we do the education budget, we tend to forget that there's other groups outside of the foundation formula and people transportation. And I believe these groups, youth in detention, the special schools, and the boarding home grants are just overdone.
Sharon, would you like to explain it? And I think you did a pretty good job at it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Meyer, yes. This year there was the operating budget bill and there was another bill for K-12. These are the programs that aren't formula funded.
Well, I'll remove my objection if there's no other questions or concerns. Seeing none, Representative Hawker.
If I may, to the chair, to make the amendment, this is FY06 money, but I'm looking, the explanation talks about it wasn't in the fast track supplemental, so is this money needed for 05 if this was overlooked, or is this 06?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hawker, this is 06 money.
06 money.
06 operating monies. We funded the formula programs in the fast track supplemental.
Okay. This is fleshing out.
This is to pull in the other programs that were in a separate bill into the operating budget. And that was 6 months.
Representative Meyer.
Right. If I may just add, because it was a little confusing, we had put $400 million, the windfall, into the education fund, and then the remaining amount of K-12 was to be funded with those 6 general fund dollars, and just had forgot to include these items.
This, if I may, a query for the maker of the amendment. This money does not go into the newly created education fund. This is just a traditional appropriation for these activities.
That's correct.
Thank you very kindly, sir. I appreciate the response.
Any other questions? I'll remove my objection. If there's no other objections, we will adopt Amendment DEED-1. Representative Meyer. DEC number one.
I move DEC number one.
And I'll object just for explanation.
I know my name is on this, but I hope somebody else has an explanation.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, this was brought forward by the administration. It is for some EVOS funding to fully fund the position, and perhaps someone from the administration would like to speak to this.
Okay. Please, step forward. State your name for the record and give us your explanation.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Kurt Fredrickson. I'm acting commissioner for the Department of Environmental Conservation. This is funding Exxon Valdez oil spill settlement monies. This would allow the commissioner's office to engage the Exxon Valdez oil spill trustee council in what is a really critical juncture right now with respect to the restoration of the damaged resources from the Exxon Valdez oil spill. We're addressing lingering oil, which has been discovered on some of the beaches in Prince William Sound, and we have in September 2006 a reopener clause in the original settlement agreement where any unanticipated damages could be brought back to Exxon's attention. There's a lot of work going on. This would provide the commissioner's office with the staff resources to engage with the other 5 Exxon Valdez oil spill trustee council members.
Representative Hawker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a technical point of consistency, I presume this is a $46,000 appropriation, not a $46 million appropriation.
Representative Hawker, through the chair, this is $46,000.
Thank you. And next question, I noticed that it said this was not considered by the House Finance Subcommittee. Is this something that arose in the last week or so, or was it?
Representative Hawker, through the chair, this was introduced as a governor's amended item, which was not taken up by the subcommittee, and it was just the last Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council meeting where I got the trustee council to agree for the use of the settlement monies for this purpose, and it was in the governor's amended.
You read my mind, third point, the trustees council concurs with this.
They do.
Thank you, sir.
Any questions? Seeing none, I'll remove my objection. Are there any objections to adopting Amendment DEC number one? Seeing none, we will adopt that amendment, and we will move to F and G number one. Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Fish and Game number one.
Okay. I will object for discussion purposes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This intent language was put in for the purpose of not allowing a process that happened this past year that we had 4 million fish sold at 10 cents a pound when the going rate was 58 cents a pound, and there was only one bidder. And the test fisheries certainly are problematic to, particularly to my representative to the right. We realize, too, Mr. Chairman, that at some point in time, if there isn't a contract, that there will be a deficiency in the Department of Fish and Game of up to $250,000. So further down the road, we may look at putting that money in. It's a general fund appropriation, but at least at this point, this puts the Department of Fish and Game on notice that we don't want them to
enter into the marketplace and follow it up.
Is there anybody from Fish and Game here that would like to talk to this issue? You know, and I guess maybe it might not be a bad idea to talk to it a little bit. Give us an idea of your contracts. I know that I have people in my area that are frustrated with the test fisheries, and I know there's other areas of the state. Is this something that you can utilize? Is there some way, as our intent language states, that you know, we would be looking at a more fair market value for those test fish caught versus just somebody's number that they pull out of their hat, I guess?
Please. Sure, Mr. Chair. My name is Tom Lawson, Admin Services Director with Fish and Game. In response to your question, this is a goal that we certainly strive for. Representative Holm was our budget chair, and we had a pretty thorough discussion about what happened in the Bristol Bay area, and it was just a series of unfortunate circumstances. But we certainly strive to get full market value for each test fishery. We were in front of you, I think, during the supplemental to fix some language, and we had a little bit of a conversation at that point. But I think Representative Holm also made the statement, too. I mean, one of the issues is that we're forced to do cost recovery because of, appropriations made to fund various fish and game programs. So I think down the road it would be something to look at in terms of, replacing test fish receipts with a general fund or some other funding source.
Yeah, and I guess my question would be, have we tried in contracts that you've put out in the past, have we tried to go back to try to get some more market value for the fish versus just the initial contract negotiated?
Mr. Chair, I can't speak to that. I'd have to go back and find the answer, but as I understand it, we always try to get market value. What happened in the Bristol Bay situation last year is that there was only one bidder, and it was a different time of when we typically harvest the fish. And so there's a couple of circumstances that led us. We were painted into a corner, in essence, where there was a very low price, and we had to make a decision. Did we go ahead and do it? And face the consequences which we're facing today, or do we, go forward or not go forward with some programs that were funded, that were to be funded with that revenue stream?
Okay, I guess my last question is being, I'll let some others ask. Is that number of 10 cents a pound, is that somewhere that's near normal to what you normally get on contracts, or does that price fluctuate from a dime to a dollar a pound?
The price fluctuates, depending on the fishery, but that was very low, as I think everyone understood.
Okay, Representative Stoltz.
Thank you. Maybe from the fishermen at the table, I explain this for are the terms of cost recovery and test fishery, are those interchangeable terms, are they different?
Test fishery, as I understand it, Mr. Chairman, you go out and you say you prospect for crab in certain spots, and then how our vessels see what the biomass is in an area, and they test by using the fishery there. And instead of throwing them back, because sometimes they can be damaged, they can sell them, and the test fishery determine the biomass specific areas determine if you're going to open them. A cost recovery fishery is where they'll actually send out a contract for vessels to bid to work with the Department of Fish and Game to catch fish, so they pay for the management of the fishery when they reach the when they harvest it, and then they pay for the biologists or managers to do actually implement the fishery. Then they open the fishery to the common property after they've done the cost recovery fishery to manage the fishery.
Representative,
got an expert right here. It's our test for fisheries, have they been morphed into a cost recovery type fishery design?
It can, but generally they're so different in sort of nomenclature that they aren't really it's really a test fishery to determine biomass in an area as opposed to cost recovery. You're really going out there to recoup your costs so you don't charge the general fund. And cost recovery is really a product of the last 12, 14 years we've used to do that. Hatcheries have cost recovery fisheries they've been doing since they opened in order to reduce the state's debt. And commercial fisheries have used the term of art cost recovery fisheries based on hatcheries basically.
Yeah. I hope he was going to stop our tour because he probably has hourly rate. Mr. Chairman, I just have another question.
Representative Stoll.
Regarding the price, is the price you get in a test fishery, is it always, usually, sometimes under the market? How much of an aberration is this?
Sometimes it's above market, particularly if it's early season fishery and they're brighter. Early return will be a higher demand, so a higher price as the season goes on. What this intent language says is that retroactively adjust, that's basically a kickback, which recognizes at the end of the season there's going to be a price adjustment up and the state and the fisherman will get another check. What this intent language is to run it more like a business. You anticipate there's going to be cost recovery test fishery, line these things up in advance. Work it like you're going to get a maximum return on your investment. And do it right. These things just don't happen. It's built into your management program. So you know in advance you should start getting contracts out now. Start doing things so you know what's going on. I think that's what I'm saying.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and thank you, Representative Weinrock. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Croft.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, I think this is an important way to tackle this problem. Clearly, in a pure test fishery, you don't want wanton waste, so you don't want to throw them overboard, so selling them makes sense. But as the committee's been discussing, it's morphed into this, get more than you need for the actual test recovery and sell those to cover the cost of the test recovery, test fishery itself. That, too, may be appropriate given how scarce GF is, but it really adds insult to injury when you sell it for such a low price under the market price. Not only have you destabilized the market price that fishermen are relying on, but you have to sell so much more fish at 10 cents a pound, and so it multiplies that effect. And some of us have been playing with a bill to require this. This seems to me to be an in-between approach that may work very well. It gives you some ammunition when those bids come in so low to say, I just can't do this, and maybe can we do it at 40 or 50 or something much closer to the market price, an ability to reject that bid that you didn't have before. I guess I wanted to follow up on the discussion there. So should we say test or cost recovery fishery? I don't necessarily want to pull in all the hatchery cost recovery, but I want to make it clear that we're not just talking about the price you get for the test fish itself, but the price you get for the extra fish to pay for the test fishery. Are those commonly understood as all under test fishery? Is there a distinction between the sort of biological test fishery and the economic or cost recovery test fishery?
Through the chair, Representative Croft, we clearly understand what the intent of this language is, so we're very comfortable with it, and I don't think it needs to be massaged at all. So.
Okay, good. Then I won't, because of danger of unintended consequences, but we'll just put on the record here. This means that you will try and get fair market value. We intend you to get fair market value when you sell the fish in the actual test fishery or when you sell fish that support that test fishery.
Mr. Chairman, I think this raises an issue, and that is, I'm not sure whether it's been done or not, and I may request a legislative audit to determine whether it's been done or not, but cost recovery fisheries are theoretically implemented to reduce the Department of Overhead costs and general fund monies relative to managing specific fisheries. But if those fisheries did not have test fisheries and were common property fisheries, what would be the take to the state through the payment of raw fish tax or other fisheries landed by the fishermen in the harvest, and is it more or less than that test fishery? Are we really trying to do something here that gives less of a return to the state than not? And I don't know the answer to that. I don't think any of us do, and I'm curious. So.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? With that, I'll remove my objection. If there's no objection, we will adopt Amendment F and G number 1. And then we'll move to HSS number 1.
Mr. Chairman, move HSS number 1, sir.
Check.
HSS number 1 is another one of those technical corrections of funding sources for the retirement system. The original bill had retirement funded in the language section. The Led Finance yourself have moved it to the numbers section. This is a $700 adjustment in a $1.5 billion budget, correcting the transition.
Is your objection maintained, Representative Weiler? Representative Trout.
Yeah, well, I may have one just a question that may lead to that objection. So why didn't the subcommittee chair catch this in the subcommittee?
we found it in the decimal dust as the day was set.
No objection, I guess.
I'll remove my objection again. Is there any other objections? If not, we will adopt Amendment HSS 1. And we will move to DMVA number 1.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and move DMVA number 1.
And I'll object just for purposes of discussion. It looks a lot bigger than what it really is, but if we have somebody from DMVA, maybe we can just kind of zing through it. It's more of an organization, appropriation, restructuring than anything else.
This is Commissioner Campbell. Thank you. That is correct. Our budget, as we submitted, is structured like the change would recommend, and that is to put us under a proposed Military and Veterans Affairs one appropriations component as opposed to the multiple ones that you see in the current structure. This change simply makes the structure in the budget align with where the dollars are in the budget that we submitted.
Any questions, comments, or concerns? Seeing none, I will remove my objection. And if there are no other objections, we will adopt Amendment DMVA number 1.
I'll go ahead and move DMVA number.
And I'll object for conversation.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Campbell again. This is the result of this is we had an audit done by the federal government looking at our state contribution versus the federal match that we do. And for the past 10 years, they found that it was not done properly, that in fact the state owed more money. The $594,000 that you have before you is last year's correction, and the federal side has agreed that if we make this adjustment, they aren't going to be billing us for past years. They simply want us to get this current year correct in the state allocation between the federal and the state match and to budget in the future. So you're seeing the implications if we do not have this passed, but it is really driven by a DCAA audit.
Any questions?
So this is 05?
05
or 06?
05 is when they did it. It's for the 06 budget.
Okay.
Representative Weiler, is there a question? Any other questions? Seeing none, I will remove my objection. And if there are no objections, we will adopt Amendment DMVA number 2.
I'll go ahead and move DMVA number 3.
And I'll object.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Campbell again. This third item deals with telecommunications basic service charges. In the Armory and Anchorage, we have both a federal system and a state system, and the charges that are applied in this case result in needing $62,900 from the general fund to pay basically into the state DOA for their telephone service provided at the Armory.
And without this, you won't have phone service, is that correct?
Oh, without this, we'd have to make adjustments because we still owe the bill. DOA will be billing us.
Any questions? Seeing none, I will remove my objection, and if there are no other objections, we will adopt DMVA number 3. Representative Strauss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like Nico Buss to start making his way up to the stage, if you would, please. And these came in at the governor's request after we went through the committee process. So I'd like Nico to take these on, and I would move DNR 1, Mr. Chairman.
Any objection? Okay. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Nico Buss. I'm the Administrative Service Manager for the Department of Natural Resources. The first amendment for DNR is $176,000 for a interagency personnel agreement that we have with BLM for our North Slope Signs Initiative. Basically, BLM is willing to pay for a employee in the Department of Natural Resources to coordinate the oversight of the North Slope Signs projects. It's basically a group of people consisting of the Department of Interior, Resource Agencies, Natural Marine Fisheries Service, DNR, Fishing Game, and the North Slope Borough. They collectively look at initiatives on signs and make sure that they are consistent so that the development is progressing without distractions of conflicting signs responses.
Any questions? Okay, good job. Okay, any objections to this amendment being passed? Seeing none? Sorry. Oh, do you remove your objection?
I didn't mean to do that.
He's removed his objection. So amendment DNR 1 passes. Okay, one is DNR 2.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I move DNR 2.
Object. Purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. DNR amendment number 2 is for $192,000 of receipt-supported services collected by the Division of Parks to pay for a recently completed and implemented classification study for the park rangers. The effective date for this implementation was in February. This was a governor's amended request. As part of the study, some of the park rangers were reclassified and were upgraded to rangers because they do law enforcement. The original budget didn't anticipate this. And like I said, we just completed this in February, and so it was a governor's amended budget request.
Okay, we do have some questions. Representative Hawker.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Receipt supported services authority here. What receipts are we authorizing?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, these are the park camping fees, day use fees, and all the receipts that the Division of Parks collects.
Do we, within our current fee structure, do we have sufficient fees to cover this increment, or will we be required to raise our fee structure?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, the fees that we are currently projecting will cover this extra cost.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Stoltz.
Mr. Chairman, I don't understand this this classification. These folks are moving up the law enforcement category. Does that change the type of retirements they're eligible for, potentially?
Through the chair, Representative Stoltz. Basically, they stay exactly in the same position. This has been a study that we've been looking at for the last 3 years. Their retirement system stays exactly as it was. They're just part of a regular person. They don't get any extra changes to the retirement system.
Okay. Any other questions? Seeing none, any objections to this bill or amendment being passed? Seeing none, Amendment 2 is adopted. Okay, let's go on to DNR 3. Oh, look, I removed my objection. DNR 3.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move DNR 3.
Okay, all objections.
Through the chair, Representative Meyer, this request is basically a switch from one component into the Division of Parks. Division of Parks has three components. One is park management, the other one is park access, and the third one is history and archaeology. The governor's budget envisioned some receipt supported services in the park access code. This amendment basically puts the receipt supported services all in park management, where the rangers and the technicians are maintaining the parks and all the receipts come in. So it's kind of a technical switch to keep the receipt supported service funding all in one place.
Okay, do you have any questions? Seeing none, I remove my objection. Any other objections? Seeing none, that amendment passes.
Next, we will move on to public safety.
Move EPS 1.
And I will object. Just for conversation purposes, Sharon, if you'd like to explain what this language amendment does.
Mr. Chair, this is amendment language to Section 23 in the bill, and it adds the Inland Boatmen's Union of the Pacific, the Masters, Mates, and Pilots, and the Public Safety Employees Association, and it recognizes the change in the monetary terms of labor contracts.
Any questions?
My objections, Mr. Chairman.
If there are no other objections, we will adopt DPS Amendment Number 1. Next, we will move to DPS Amendment Number 2.
Chairman, I'll move DPS Number 2.
And I will object. So, Sharon, if you'd like to explain that.
Mr. Chairman, this is the funding that comes with the public safety bargaining unit contract terms. There's $1.7 million in general funds. There's GF match included in that, $60,000 in federal receipts and $63.8 in other funds.
Any questions or concerns? Representative Botford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just again, same question. When was this bargaining contract completed, and I'm just kind of curious, just timing.
Through the chair, Representative Potker, I don't have the exact date. Someone here, man.
There's somebody from admin, please.
For the record, Art Chance, Director of Labor Relations. Through the chair, the public safety one was a product of interest arbitration, and we received the arbitrator's award on, I believe, March 9th.
Thank you very much. No objection, sir.
Any other questions, concerns, or comments? Seeing none, I will remove my objection. If there are no other objections, we will adopt Amendment DPS 2. Next, we will move on to the revenue, and Revenue Amendment Number 1.
Yes, sir. I move Revenue Amendment Number 1.
Object.
There's an objection. Would you like to explain?
Mr. Chairman, this is the governor's.
Go ahead, Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I think Representative Hawker had a comment.
Okay. Representative Hawker.
Again, this is the same discussion we had earlier in committee here, similar to the discussion we had on the fast track supplemental increase for management fees for both the permanent fund and the Department of Revenue's management of the pension funds. The good news is investments are returning better than we expected. The bad news is we have to pay a little bit to get those returns.
That's contractual.
And that is contractual, sir, yes.
I'll remove my amendment. Any objections?
Representative Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just spend a little longer than we did on the $700 one, but I'm done now.
I
thought you were going to make an amendment.
All right. Any objection to adopting amendment number REV number 1? Seeing none, we'll approve, we'll adopt that amendment and go to revenue number two.
I'll move RED number two.
And I will object for purposes of discussion. Sure.
Mr. Chairman, this is from the governor's amendments, and I'd like to request someone from governor.
For the record, Susan Taylor, Administrative Services Director for the Department of Revenue. The department is requesting $261,100 in receipt-supported services for the Child Support Services Division. And the reason why we need this amendment is as a result of the hearing officer transfer from the Department of Revenue to the Department of Administration. We had transferred the funding source to the Department of Administration to avoid a chargeback situation. They wanted to have the funding source in their budget. Later, we discovered that they could not use our funding under the department's indirect cost allocation plan, so this is a direct charge to the Child Support Division. So we need to increase the authorization in the Child Support Services Division. If we were not to do this with the receipt-supported services, there would be tremendous programmatic impact. Because of the budget, we'd be looking at laying off bodies, up to 20 caseworker positions. We would also reduce field offices in Fairbanks, Wasilla, and Juneau. Child support modifications would be delayed, and orders would also be delayed, and of course the length of time to process requested audits and adjustments to accounts would also increase. And I guess the last thing is you would get even more calls to your offices with complaints, as with the commissioner's office and undoubtedly the governor's office. So we would request your support of this amendment.
Just a comment, I sure don't need any more calls.
And with that, any more questions, Mr.
Chairman? Representative Croft, I think, had a question.
This sets up a chargeback situation, so that, or is that right?
That was what was envisioned in the fiscal note. Representative Croft through the chair, but now, this it would be a chargeback situation because it would be a direct cost to the child support program. We can't use our indirect cost allocation.
But that's what I want to get to. You're going to fix it so that we can. I mean, we didn't intend by, I supported the hearing officer bill, but that there'd be some mechanism to continue to get the indirect cost recovery, or the cost recovery, let's say, from the federal government. This is going to put it back into a situation where we can, for those hearing officers that are hearing child support cases, we're going to be able to allocate whatever percentage we were allowed before to the federal government.
Representative Croft, through the chair, no, we will not. We are working with the Office of Child Support Enforcement in the Department of Health and Human Services. We're going through kind of the informal process to see whether we can charge these direct costs to the federal government. The preliminary answer we have gotten is that no, we cannot, because of the title change of the hearing officers.
Well, let's change their titles, right? I mean, isn't there a way? Are you going to propose then a legislative solution or returning it to child support?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Croft, that would be a prerogative of the legislature to change the title.
Certainly our prerogative, Mr. Chairman. I would like to know, I'd like the department to tell me how we can do that. I like a consolidated hearing officer, but not if it's going to, we can't charge the federal government what we should. So we don't have to do it here, but I would like to know how to fix it. And you said you're going to lose 20 caseworker positions, if we don't appropriate this 261, it can't be that that supports 20 people. That's only $13,000 apiece. It's because of the leveraging of the federal funds that...
Correct. It, Representative Croft, through the chairman, it's kind of we're getting a double whammy, if you will. We haven't had those costs in the division's budget, and then we're going to have to, if this amendment were not to pass, use existing funds that would leverage federal funds, so it would have a real cumulative impact.
What receipts are you receiving? I mean, I guess I expected to see this fix as an IA, you know, as a mm-hmm. as a we are going to now charge through the central hearing officer to the division of to the Department of Revenue Child Support Services Division, and in that way create a cost center so that we could charge it out to the federal government. But that's not what you're doing. It's some other receipt.
The source of the receipt-supported services is when the non-custodial payment, the non-custodial parent is either paying current child support or an arrears payment when a child has been in state custody or the family has received ATAP or Medicaid. So whenever someone is signing up for Medicaid, Alaska Temporary Assistance, the state's public assistance program, or foster care, they have to sign up for child support. So that's the source of their receipt-supported services.
Okay. Well, it's not relevant to this, we can continue, but I wish we'd known at the time on the hearing officer there were, it might have changed some of our minds about that particular, moving that particular one over to the central hearing officer.
Representative Hawker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Croft went after my first line of questions, but sort of specifically here, could you one more time clarify for me what receipts we are going to be taking? This is going to be where we will be taking a cut out of child, in any sense, of child support payments?
Currently, the Child Support Division budgets these receipt-supported services that it collects. Earlier in the hearing, there were questions, do you really think that we can collect or earn all of these receipts? We are getting to the high side of our earning capacity, but this isn't an unusual thing. This is something that we have these receipt-supported services, Representative Hawker, through the chair, in our operating and capital budgets for the division, and I'm not sure I'm getting to the heart of your question.
How could you ever guess? Don't you wish you were answering a question about the management fees for pension funds?
There you go.
No, but you just, and since you know, focus on the detail, truly okay. The nit here. This, you know, follow the money. This money is coming exactly from whom, what, or where?
Okay. The majority of the funds are from non-custodial parents, where the custodial parent and their child has been getting a cash assistance payment from the Alaska Temporary Assistance Program. So we're tracking that, and then obligation is an obligation of the non-custodial parent. So when they're making that payment, instead, Representative Hawker, through the chair, this might make it clearer, when we get that payment in, because when the ATAP payment went out, it was a state payment and it was a federal payment. Part of that goes back to the federal government, and then part of it is retained by the state, and we have accounted for the amount retained by the state as receipt-supported services and have used it as a funding mechanism for the Child Support Services Division.
Speaking of what we are tell me if I am making the correct statement here. By authorizing this receipt-supported services increment, we are not going to be taking this money away from dependent children. But what we're going to be using is the money that we recover from obligor absent parent, non-custodial parents, that essentially the state is pre-funding through other programs.
Mm-hmm. Representative Hawker, through the chair, that is correct.
And in the past, prior to making this change, which apparently had an unanticipated consequence in the structural change, we were recovering this money entirely from our federal indirect cost plan.
Representative Hawker, through the chair, that is correct.
Comment, a question, comment being, obviously we may want to reconsider our previous action, and a question, and that is, if since what we're doing here is a fund source change from federal, it appears to me to be a fund source change from federal to receipt-supported services, should we not have a decrement in federal authority someplace in this amendment?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, in the budget, we do have a funding source change to maybe step back. We had a fiscal note as a result of the hearing officer bill, which transferred the CSED admin from the Department of Revenue Commissioner's Office to the Department of Administration Centralized Hearing Office. And then in the governor's amended budget, Department of Administration had a funding source change to reduce that and increase interagency receipts. So that half of the transaction is included in the House budget report.
So I'm following. We've already fund source changed the federal receipts to interagency receipts within the Department of Revenue, or excuse me, the Department of Admin here. So should, rephrasing my question, should we not have a corresponding decrement in interagency receipts matching this fund source change to receipt supported services?
Representative Hawker, through the chair, no, because the Department of Administration, in order for it to be a budgeted RSA, would need the interagency receipts. So their kind of half of the fix has been made. And then now, so the Child Support Services Division has the authorization to pay the bill. We need to do this side of the transaction, if you will.
So I guess the conclusion I'm to draw is that in the budget that was brought forward and made it through subcommittee is now in the CS, the books didn't balance. We have too many credits, not enough debits, and now you're balancing the books.
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, yes. And I kind of apologize. It was, you know, is this going to be receipt-supported services? Is this going to be receipt-supported services in federal funds? And my approach in this is I think that the department needs to budget for the receipt-supported services. We will continue to pursue federal reimbursement of these so that we can match the federal funds with the receipt-supported services. Right now, we think that that is an unlikely situation, so that's why we need this amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hawker, Representative Holm.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Representative Hawker asked my question. I just was curious as to why we didn't show this money previously in the deficit. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hawker.
If I may, a concluding comment for the committee and the chairs. I think this is an exemplary point of a problem we have systemic in our budgeting process. And that is, while we tend, it appears to me that we reconcile, certainly in my budgets, we reconcile transfers in and transfers out, the trends and droughts, the A trends, the A droughts, the books balance, debits equal credits, A equals B, ins equals outs. this whole interagency receipt thing in this budgeting process, it just almost shocks me as a guy who spent his life balancing books that we don't balance our interagency receipts as part of the budgeting process. And I think this is an example of a classic example of how both things fall through the cracks, but it also says it allows us the ability as budget people to budget, like I can budget health and social services and pick up interagency receipt authority and say it's coming from 14 different agencies, and they on the other side don't put the obligation in, so I'm spending more money than we've budgeted on the out on the other side. It's just an issue I really think we ought to look at in times to come.
Any other questions? I'll remove my objection. If there are no objections, we will adopt revenue amendment number 2. With that, we will move on to GLCPF, amendment number 1.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and move it.
Can we get somebody from DLT up forward, Nancy? I'm reasonably sure somebody's going to have a question about why increased fuel costs now. Please.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Nancy Slagle, Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Yes, the fuel prices do continue to increase. We have we originally submitted our budget in December 15th. Those were based on November prices. And they have increased over the last few months. So we've gone back and reevaluated where the prices of fuel is for equipment, and have determined that the prices definitely are increasing in our projections based on those increased costs. So for Central Region, when we originally submitted our budget, we were basing the per gallon cost at $1.75, and now we're estimating it to be $1.84. For Southeast Region, we had originally estimated it at $1.68 per gallon, and now we're projecting it at $1.83. Northern Region is a combination. The facilities is not only heating fuel increases, but also increases due to cost increases related to electricity, water and sewer, waste disposal, and natural gas. And we're seeing about a 14.2% increase there.
Any questions?
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. And again, just consistent points. We're talking whole dollars here, not millions of dollars.
That's correct.
When we previously discussed and what I believe might be an under provision in the FY06 budget for marine highway fuel as well, and I'm curious why are we going to have another? Is there another amendment that addresses marine highway fuel?
To the chair, Representative Hawker, it is not included in this packet. We are continuing to look at the fuel prices are increasing as we've stated. We are also having new Deputy Commissioner of Marine Highways, Marine Transportation, and he's looking at our operating plan for next year in association with the Marine Highway Transportation Board. And so we're looking at whether there needs to be changes in the operating plan as well as fuel price increases. And so he's looking at both of those in conjunction. So it's very likely that you will see an amendment during this process.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions? Representative Croft.
Yeah. Would it be appropriate to add intent language that says you may only use this money for fuel costs only? Would that cause any problems?
Through the chair, Representative Croft, I do not believe it will be a problem.
You list in your backup that it's fuel prices and utility costs have gone up. Wouldn't you need some authority to add utility fuel or utility costs, since they're the ones you're going to pay?
Through the chair, Representative Croft, only in the area of Northern Region facilities would that be an issue. The other highways and aviation is purely equipment fuel.
Northern Region might need the ability to spend this on utility costs.
That's correct.
Would you like that, Mr. Chairman, as an amendment to limit this to only fuel?
Would I like it?
Yeah.
Not particularly, but then you can I won't do it if you would like to do it.
Nope.
Any other questions? Seeing none, I'll remove my objection, and if there are no objections, we will adopt amendment DOTDF number one. And I'll object this to the purposes of discussion. Hence, if you'd like to speak briefly to the FAA requirement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe you've seen this request in the FY05 Fast Track and Regular Supplemental. It is the Air Traffic Control Services at the King Salman Airport. The contract is requires us to pay approximately $68,000 for maintaining that the air traffic control services for the year. We do continue to have discussions and negotiations with FAA concerning responsibility for this tower, hoping that we'll be able to get some more assistance, but we need to have some assurance that we can continue to have that service through 06.
And I would have a question. What happens if the tower contractor chooses to end the services?
Mr. Chairman, yeah. I could probably answer that right here. Okay. It says, outcome of saved lives, I guess somebody dies.
Outcome of saved lives?
It's pretty clear here in their statement. You know, unless that's an exaggeration, I don't know. So this is one of those life and death amendments.
Could be.
Mr. Chairman, it is an issue, a safety issue, when you have such a wide variety of aircraft coming into a fairly busy airport during some peak seasons. You have everything from small aircraft to military jets.
Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How does this contract work? Because I can visualize and see that this is a very busy airport during the summer, but I would think that the other months is fairly quiet. But do we have to pay for this service for 12 months, or is this just for the peak period in the summer?
To the Chair, Representative Meyer, it is a monthly basis, the same dollar amount on a monthly basis. So I'm assuming that the service is provided likewise, but I'm not positive on that. I can certainly get that for you. It would help.
Well, I imagine the contract is probably 12 months or none. Having just been out there and spent some time out there, I mean, you can see that the summer is going to be real busy, but when we were there last week, it wasn't very busy. And so, but again, not knowing the terms of the contract and what you had to negotiate to get that. I guess it's an unfair question.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I had asked a question on this before and got a satisfactory answer, but one of the parts of the answer, it seems to me, was the question of whether this cost was going to go away because of some negotiations with FAA. And I guess I didn't really expect to see it back, but maybe the time's been so short there's no answer yet. But is there still a prospect that this goes away?
Through the Chair, Representative Kelly, we are having discussions with FAA on the responsibility for these services. They will be doing a further plane count, but I don't believe that that's till towards it's sometime in August. There's also discussions going on with the U.S. Air Force about their participation in it, so we are trying to get some assistance in both areas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, I'll remove my objection. And if there are no other objections, we will adopt amendment DOTDF number two. I'll move number three. And I'll object. And Nancy, if you'd like to speak to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, this is increased cost that we're anticipating. Specifically, this is for the Anchorage International Airport. After the review of the fuel and utility costs associated with maintaining the airport facilities and their field and equipment maintenance shops, the prices have continued to increase, and the refined projections for next year indicate that we will need total of $2.6 million in International Airport Revenue Fund authority to pay for those increased costs.
Any questions? Seeing none, I will remove my objection, and if there are no other objections, we will adopt BOTPF number 3.
I'm going to move on the board.
Clarification.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is specifically $2.5 million in International Airport Revenue Funds requested for the parking garage activities and for fog seating at the Anchorage Airport. A few years ago, the parking garage had been under a contract by the airport. In other words, we administered a contract for the operation of the parking garage. Then it was converted to a concession-based operation, which has been operating that way for the last couple of years. When it's a concession-based, that means the concessionaire receives the revenues, makes the expenditures associated with it, and then pays to the airport system a percentage of the revenues that are generated from that operation. It's been determined that concession process has not been working well, and the airlines and the airport have decided that they want to bring that back into the airport's budget, and to put it back under a contract as opposed to having it as a concession. So this puts the authority back in the airport's budget to administer the contract for the parking garage. The $80,000 of this is for fog seating, which was in the past. It was administered by the airline association itself. They've determined that this would be better funded and administered by the airport. Fog seating is, do you want me to explain what that is?
Yeah, please, because I'm just real curious.
We're growing fog.
Fog seating is a means for trying to reduce the amount of fog that's on the air runways. It is taking dry ice and crushing it into small pellets, and fog will condense on that dry ice. So they have a plane that goes over the fog layer and disperses this dry ice pellets in those areas in the approach and the takeoff areas of the runway. The fog can then condense onto the dry ice, and it relieves the fog and allows for us to be able to continue to operate and not have to shut down the runways during high fog times. So it's has worked very well apparently in the past, and they're looking at some other options also in providing this assistance, looking at some type of flare technology as well. Does
you
that
do
help?
That in general?
We have GPS.
They don't do it in Fairbanks either.
I don't know what size that is at home.
Not
Thinking of a few other things on that issue.
Never mind.
Are there any other questions on amendment number DOTPF4?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Wyrock.
I'm still not sure that this is an appropriate state budget expenditure. I'm not sure why.
In regards to.
The airport is paying this and these through the airport. I mean, what?
They are.
Oh, okay, so this those are
it's airport funds.
Airport revenue funds.
Oh, right. I'm sorry.
They're just asking for the authority to be able to spend more of them.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Include the short answer.
Any other questions or comments?
I'll go ahead and withdraw my file.
Hang on. First, before we get through to there, if there's no other objectives, we will adopt the amendment.
I didn't hear any objections.
I didn't either. Be careful what you live for. Next, we'll take up Representative Foster, DOTPF number 5. Representative Foster.
Object.
Nancy, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is for the Fairbanks International Airport, and it is also in relation to increased costs associated with the increases in electricity and fuel bills. That, as you've seen on the other areas of our amendments, there's also a part of this has to do with some marketing activities for the Fairbanks Airport. There has been no staff specifically dedicated to working on marketing issues. Anchorage International Airport has had marketing staff. Fairbanks hasn't. We believe that we can certainly work really dedicated towards trying to increase not only airlines coming into the airport, but additional concessionaires and lease slots and all of those types of things to help generate more revenues for the Fairbanks International Airport.
Is this the proposed Don Young International Airport? I didn't get any rise out of my opponents over there, but Representative Hall.
Thanks. You don't have any opponents, Mr. Chairman. We're all in this boat with you. I was just curious as to how much money is in this airport revenue fund balance, the 1027. We keep appropriating out of it. Must be a huge pot of funds.
Through the chair, Representative Holm. Off the top of my head, I don't have the numbers. We do, but we can provide you a copy of the financial statements as of the end of last year. There is quite a bit of money that does go into the International Airport Revenue Funds. It completely covers the cost of operating the two, the Anchorage International Airport, Fairbanks International Airport. It provides some support for Cold Bay and Sitka, which are as backup airports, and it covers the capital budget items for those airports as well, for the two international airports. So there is quite a bit of money that does flow through that that fund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could just follow up, I know that it's going back, but I was just curious when. And part of the last of the last portion, you said 20 or 30 diverts would cost the state $10,000 in lost revenues. If they're diverted to Fairbanks International Airport or diverted to Sitka or someplace else, why would it cost the state any less money? It didn't make sense to me unless there was some way that they weren't paying the $5,000 landing fees or whatever the cost of land and you have any idea? I just seems strange to me.
To the chair, Representative Holm, I'm not sure on that dollar figure. I know that certainly I would think that it would could have more of a longer term effect on our ability to generate revenue than on an individual basis, and that's from airlines not being able to get into an area when they want to and changing their flight patterns. So that's always a possibility. And there are airlines that are going to fairly large cargo flights that could eventually bypass some of our airports if they so desire. So we continue to want to have them land at our airports. One thing I would like to add also is that the Airlines Association, in their operating agreement that is in place for the airport system, requires that the airlines review the capital and the operating budget. They vote on the capital budget itself, and they do review the operating budget as it's submitted and provide comment as necessary, so that you have that assurance that the airlines have looked at the budget also.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lee.
Thank you, Representative Stoltz.
Thank you, Chairman. And I'll read through the description here. It makes a reference to a performance measure in which the Interior Airport has deficiency in the expenditures and revenues. How? What is the scope of that deficiency of that airport's ability to, and how is that gap filled?
Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, I believe that the deficiency is probably. I'm guessing on this because I haven't seen the numbers recently, but I thought it was approximately about $4 million, and that's a rough number. What it is that the international airports make up a system. So you have the Anchorage, the Fairbanks airports, and then you have the two backup airports that are being funded by it. So all of the funding from that system supports those airports. So what Fairbanks is lacking, Anchorage is providing that assistance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Here. Representative Croft.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the 50,000 funds a new business position, and then each of these three appropriations underneath that are to meet increased costs. The 50,000 is new, and the other are increased costs.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, then I would propose on those last three appropriations, not the 50,000 because it's for a different purpose, but the 50,000, the 206.8, the 77.7, the 43.2, and I assume, like Representative Hawker did, that those are all, that's 206,000, not 206.
That's correct.
The language be added to all of those that can only be used for increased fuel costs.
Yeah. Not object to it, I guess, Representative Croft. Mm-hmm. But we can have the motion, and we'll vote on it. But I mean, we got their kilowatt hour costs associated here, and think if that's what they want to spend or need to spend their money on through the Golden Valley Electric Authority, that that's what they should spend their money on. But if you want to...
But the justification is the increased fuel costs and why we should spend utility or insurance or anything else when it's the increased fuel that is the problem. I don't understand.
Well, they give us a breakdown of their Golden Valley utility costs of their rate increases. And it's basically broken down into two different sections that I see. The kilowatt cost per hour has went up, that's through Golden Valley, and then they similarly have heating cost per gallon that it is. I guess I'm trying to see where you're looking at wanting to do that at, Representative Croft. Because the 206 is airport field maintenance.
The 206, Mr. Chairman, 206. Is for facilities. That's, you're right, oh, that's utilities.
One above it.
Right.
That's airport facilities. Mm-hmm. Okay, the 77 is for equipment maintenance. And the last one is for airport safety.
Yeah.
And so if you'd like to say that again, and let me think about it a little bit.
Okay, yeah, each of those you identified correctly, sir, and they're all costs related to increased fuel. Now, the increased fuel chunks, you know, goes on through Golden Valley. It ends up in increased utility costs. It results in a lot of things, but the source of the problem is the increase in fuel costs. And this morning on the subcommittee, we limited for that very to fuel only for a huge number of villages across the state, because the subcommittee then thought it was appropriate, because fuel was the problem, only to limit it to fuel in the solution. And what's good for the goose is good for the gander. If every single village in this state, when we're trying to give them assistance, is we limited them to fuel only, let's do that here. And I'd be willing to go back and do that for the Anchorage Airport as well. If we're going to do this to the communities affected by this, and they're even worse affected than the Anchorage Airport and the Fairbanks Airport, because the fuel costs are that much higher in rural Alaska, and we ought to have the courage to do it here. And if you want to, it's not just Fairbanks, I'll move it for the Anchorage Airport.
Thank you, Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe I'm missing something. Like, for example, Fairbanks Airport safety, there's 43,200. So that airport safety is because of fuel costs that you need the additional money?
To the Chair, Representative Meyer, yes, it's for fuel for driving their vehicles around the, for patrolling.
So each one of these items is for fuel costs?
Yes.
Representative Holder.
Yeah, I was just going to make a point. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to make the point that this is from a different fund than general funds. Morning, we were talking about general fund expenditure. And this is strictly the airport revenue funds. So, for whatever that's worth.
Representative, no, if that's true, we're talking about how they expend them, though. We were meeting a fuel crisis. A fuel crisis manifests itself in utilities in a lot of different areas. And we, in the supplemental, in that assistance to villages, limited it to fuel. I thought that was inappropriate. But if we're going to do that to every single village in this state, we ought to do it to the airport in general. If we're going to meet, we have another one coming up on the Marine Highway System. If that's what we're going to say, we ought to say it consistently.
Representative Kelly, did you have a question?
A caution that worries me more, that we leave it out in other areas. In other words, we're saying to, in this area of this, our state-run operation, you say you're gonna spend it on fuel, but then we kind of add, and by golly, you better. But all the other expenditures out there, we don't have that same caveat, and it would seem to me that if we go down that road, that it is with some peril, because then we have to name this extra sentence, which is, and you darn well better, to everything that we send money out for. The second part is, the funds that Representative Croft is talking about, I think, are subsidies to the citizens. Am I crossing up any bills here? Subsidies to the citizens for their increased fuel costs, rather than to state facilities in those remote locations. I see a difference. This is a state operation. Another is a cash subsidy to someone not involved in government. So I see a distinction there. So I have those two concerns, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Meyer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Representative Holm hit it on the head. This morning what we were talking about was general fund money, which we do have more direct control over, and we do need to make sure it's going to where we as a body intend to. This is primarily airport money that they've raised by the fees that they charge on the various aircraft that land there. Now, certainly we have jurisdiction and oversee that, but we're not involved in their day-to-day operations. So I'm a little more comfortable giving them flexibility here than what we did this morning.
Representative Hawker.
Thank you, sir. If we may, could we direct the question to the department? Would limiting this to fuel purchase, if it would be your position on that, would that be troublesome, acceptable, or absolutely unacceptable?
Now, through the chair, Representative Hawker, to require us to use this for fuel and utilities, I would not have a problem with that.
You said you...
It was the very amendment rejected.
Croft.
Thank you. It was the very amendment rejected this morning on the fast track supplemental. Just briefly, then we can move on. We're almost done with these amendments. The point is fuel affects utilities, and we tried to put in utilities, and were rejected. I mean, when your fuel prices go up, your utilities cost more. And we told communities trying to respond to a fuel crisis they couldn't spend on utilities. Let's be consistent and do it here. In terms of the source of funds, it doesn't matter to me. What we're talking about is how you expend them. If you're going to meet a fuel crisis, only spend it on fuel. We don't want to buy them lunches with this, or we want to buy in fuel costs. In terms of there was another distinction made on, was this going to individuals? No, it's not. This is not PCE. This is assistance to governmental units. The municipalities or other comparable organizations that are providing governmental service at the village level. So that here we're saying, well, how should the state government interact with a governmental unit, the transportation entity of the airport? And before we were talking about how should a governmental unit, us, deal with another governmental unit, municipalities who are in trouble. They're in trouble because of fuel costs. And we limited how that government can respond by saying you can only spend it on fuel. And I don't care if your utilities doubled. But when it's an airport in Fairbanks or Anchorage, we're very concerned about their flexibility. And we understand then that we ought to give them the flexibility to meet utilities, because everybody understands increased fuel means increased utility costs. We ought to do this afternoon what we did this morning.
Yeah. Representative Holman.
Yeah, quickly. I think we're getting confused here between appropriation and allocation. It is not our job, Mr. Chairman, I think, to allocate so closely. That's why we have a BRU process and RDU. It is our job to appropriate through, as I understand it, through these larger chunks, and then allow our administrative capacity to do the allocations. Certainly we can request that they do it, but to make those demands, I think, are somewhat suspect.
Representative Kelly.
Just a comment relative to the distinction on PCE. We will be asked, in addition to the subsidy for high fuel costs, to address another subsidy of the 15.7 million plus the 4 point some million that the
Representative Kelly, I'll ask you to stop there. Let's try to hold it to what Representative Croft is asking for. And if we can't, then we'll go to just a straight vote on Representative Croft's amendment.
Okay, it was just to distinguish on utilities, that's all.
I understand where you were coming from, but we're starting to get way off the beaten track, and I'm just to keep it to what Representative Croft is asking. So with that, Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Croft, correct me if I'm wrong, but I do see a distinction between airport revenue funds and general funds. General funds, that's what we control. If we need more money to give to rural areas or municipalities for energy costs, then we have to either increase taxes or we have to find the money somewhere. We have to get it from the public to give them to these areas. Whereas at the airport here, if they want to raise their fees to Delta Airlines, it really doesn't impact us directly. Maybe indirectly, but not directly. whereas the general fund do impact this directly, or at least the oil companies, I guess, that's where 85% of our money comes from. But I see a distinction, and I agree with my friends from Fairbanks here. I think that the airport revenue funds are significantly different from the general funds, and I'm okay with giving a little more latitude here.
Representative Croft.
That's the implicit House Finance promise of a short. That we have less less responsibility to see that it's appropriated for legitimate reasons and within legitimate bounds? I guess I don't. We have all kinds of monetary categories. When you increase this, you enact a tax on every airline that comes through and passengers indirectly. When we increase general funds, we may or may not. We have such a strange financing system in this state. But this is why this is before us. If we didn't need to approve it to see that it was the right category and the right amount, we wouldn't even see this. It's the very reason we're asked to do this is because it's a governmental expenditure, governmental money, and it has effects on real people. So I understand that they're different, they have different names, but the distinction I don't think means we can be any less responsible with the money or worry that it affects people's lives any less. It affects them significantly. We need to be responsible. And if it's a fuel crisis we're responding to, we ought to do just what we did this morning.
Thank you, Representative Croft. And I'll still maintain my objection. So if you would like to state your motion or your amendment to the amendment, then we can vote up or down on it.
Okay. I'd be glad to repeat it, not in the way of argument, but just it's for the last three appropriations, so not the $50,000, which is a business position, but the last three that were justified by fuel increases, the 206.8, the 77.7, and the 43.2, that language be added saying those monies can only be used only for fuel, increased fuel costs.
And as I stated, I will object, so if you will call the roll.
Commissioner Foster.
Yes.
President Hawker.
Yes.
President Cohn.
No.
President Jewell.
Yes.
President Kelly.
No.
President Moses.
Yes.
President Stoll.
Yes.
President Weirach.
Yes.
President Kropp.
Yes.
President Meyer.
No.
President Schimmel.
No.
7 yeas, 4 nays.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hawker.
Sir, if I just may, privilege of stating that I do not agree with the argument put forward in favor of that amendment, although I did support the conclusion, but I was not in any way endorsing the argument made.
That's fine. With that, if there's no other objections to amendment number COTVF5, we will adopt that amendment. Seeing none, we will move on to COTVF number 6. And I will object for clarity, so if Sharon, if you or Nancy would like to speak to that.
Mr. Chairman, there are some employees in DOT that work at the airports that are covered under the Public Safety Bargaining Unit, and we previously passed an amendment covering that. This covers the employees that are located in DOT.
Any other questions? Any concerns? I will remove my objection. And if there are no objections, we will adopt amendment number 6. Next, we will move to DOTVF number 7.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move DOTVF 7.
And I will object, and Sharon, if you would like to explain that, please.
Mr. Chairman, this capitalizes the AMHS fund of the $55 million. The governor requested $48 million. The additional $6 million is to cover the vessel operations bargaining unit contract terms.
$6 million, not...
Yep. Right, 614-708-MILLION. Representative Jim.
Did they just settle on this? Is that why?
Through the chair, I believe so. Mr. Chancellor.
Thank you. No objection.
Any other questions? Seeing none, I will remove my objection, and if there is no objection, we will adopt amendment EOTPF number 7. Next, we will move to U of A number 1.
Mr. Speaker, I move U of A number 1. Mr. Chairman. And what happened here, Mr. Chairman, is that there were tentative agreements, and this provides a transition language for those employees in the University Choice Plan that to allow those these four unions below to go into the University Choice Plan, simply to transition into it.
Any questions, Representative Kelly?
Just a question, Mr. Chairman. Did that result in a quantifiable saving? I assume it did.
There was no savings or expense associated with this amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Representative Walker.
If I may, could we have a comment from the university on this amendment?
Senator.
Good to see you.
Pete Kelly from the University of Alaska, Mr. Chairman, for the record. This language has to be in there, or we can't fund it from our proceeds, or even if you had given us the appropriation for the one-time expense, or for the initial expense of transferring the employees to this program. This language has to be in there, of course. So I would say that we, the university, could not recognize those contracts or that agreement.
Sir, looks like Representative Weirach knows what he's doing, as always.
Hey, any other questions? Maybe we should. With that, Representative Saltz.
I object to Weirach.
Are you going to remove your objection?
Yes, I do.
Okay. If there are no other objections, we will adopt amendment number 1, U of A. Next, we will go to amendment number 2, U of A.
Mr. Chairman, I was asked to sponsor U of A number 2 because apparently it was placed in the wrong portion as part of Section 37, and it, I think the university should explain this one because I don't. I didn't remember seeing
it. Peter, sure.
Mr. Chairman,
well, I actually moved the amendment.
As Representative Weirach said, it was in the wrong section. This is for our authority to receive mental health authorized money for our behavioral health program partnership for 2006. It is not general fund. It is our receipt authority.
Representative Parker.
No, sorry, I was speaking very quiet. I didn't quite.
Excuse me, I wasn't close enough to the.
That was never your problem before.
Yeah. We appointed you. That'll get me. That'll get me talking. Mr. Chairman, this was Mental Health Authority receipt money that we will be receiving for our behavioral health partnership that we do with Mental Health Trust.
Any other questions?
Respect. I'm really confused on this one for the moment. Section 37, the reference here, I've got to go back to the original version of the bill. That's not the CS in front of us, but it's in the original version.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hawker, if you might want to just take a brief of these, because my piece of paper has the amendment to HB 66, not 67.
Mm-hmm. 67. Let's take a brief of these for just a moment, and then we'll sort of get anxious out of it. back to House Bill 66 and take up the amendment for the mental health trust. So with that, we will go to language number one. Representative Meyer.
I see. I move language number one.
I'll object, because I'm sure there will be. Maybe there won't be.
This is one of those items that didn't fall under anybody's subcommittee because it's in the language section. And I don't think it's appropriate to put something that's using old five general funds in this operating budget. I think this should have been on the fast track supplemental, but it wasn't. But it does kind of mess us up a little bit, Mr. Chairman, in a couple ways. First of all, I think when this was proposed, we were looking at having a surplus this year of $550 million. And the latest forecast I've heard is more like $470 million. Now, as you know, Mr. Chairman, when we did pass the Fast Track Supplemental, we estimated the surplus at $500 million, which some thought was on the high side. And we pretty much spoke for all that surplus by putting $400 in the education fund and then using the other $100 for the Fast Track Supplemental. So I don't think we have the money anymore to fund this $37 million that's being proposed. Now, I guess we do have access to the CBR this year that the minority has given us, but I would hate to have to dip into the CBR to pay for a new program. And that's what this is. This is a new program, and you've asked all of us to look at any new program and make sure that it's sustainable and that it's warranted. I'm not here to say whether it's warranted or not warranted, but I do question whether or not we can sustain this. This amount of money is for the PERS increase for the next 2 years, but certainly I would think that the municipalities would then expect us to continue the program in 08 and 09 and et cetera. And I think if we want to do that, there's a better way to do that. I would prefer to go with Representative Moses' community dividend approach, if indeed we want to go back to a revenue sharing program. But we said, or we didn't, the other body has said in the House Bill 1 that we're not going to approve the PERS increase for K-12 education. I think that we should hold the municipalities to the same standard if that's what we're going to do, Mr. Chairman. And I think the reason, I don't know why, but I think the reason that they're withholding the PERS increase for K-12 is to get them involved in helping us resolve the PERS TERS issue. And I guess I would use that same argument here, that if we pay the municipalities PERS increase, then what is the incentive for them to come to the table and help us resolve the PERS issue? So I'm not saying this is a bad idea. I think it was actually a good idea back when we had a $550 million surplus. We no longer have that, and I hate to start this if we can't sustain it. And I do want and encourage the municipalities to help us resolve the PERS issue. I know Representative Kelly's got some good suggestions. Representative Hawker's been working on it and others. And I'm just afraid we're going to lose that incentive for them to help us if we go ahead and pass this this amendment. And like I said, Mr. Chair, really this should have been in the fast-track supplemental since we are proposing to use 05 money. And we've already spent that 05 surplus money, or not spent it, we've actually saved it in the education fund. So that's my objections to this. That's why I support this amendment.
Any other questions? Representative Frost.
Yeah. Somewhat stunned. I guess I hadn't I'd read this, but I misunderstood what it was doing at first. I didn't realize it was deleting the entire assistance to political subdivisions for the PERS-TERS situation. We've said in the debate on municipal assistance, every state, or the vast majority of states, have some form of municipal assistance. It makes sense for the state that has that much more ability to gather wealth to help out communities in some way, particularly in a state so as reliant on natural resource wealth. It makes sense that we have some other way that we help local governments, which are closest to the people and can provide that service the best. I felt it was a mistake to get rid of municipal assistance and revenue sharing, but as we grope towards some other way of doing it, this seemed an interim way to help. We did it a huge sort of triple whammy hit our municipalities. Us cutting out municipal assistance and revenue sharing, us continuing to mandate the senior property tax exemption without paying it, any portion of it. I guess I'm going to get beyond triple whammy here pretty soon, but the impact of the PERS TERS situation, which I do think we can find a solution on, and I'm not convinced is a crisis, though it's clearly an issue that we should understand and address. All those things hit the people who are providing services, governmental services on the ground level, directly in the last couple of years. And this measure by the governor, here I'm defending the governor's proposals, was a way to soften some of that blow. It didn't get you all the way back to the heydays of municipal assistance or even the most recent municipal assistance, but it did provide some assistance for the most dramatically identifiable problem for them. You know, this kind of a cut, that, while it's $37 million, doesn't get rid of a single state bureaucrat. It doesn't. It's us shifting again the burden back down. We have no. It's rather than making the hard decisions about what we need to cut on the state level or need to raise in terms of revenue on the state level, we're simply again passing the burden down to the local government. I guess I'm most surprised, you know, Mr. Kocher, for people who have served on local governments. They are in trouble. They deliver the services at the local level, and we should help. We should find a mechanism to help in the long term, sustainable. But in the meantime, while we're trying to struggle with it, we should do this partial help. This is a fair amount of money, but in the context of the overall state budget, it's not that large. I was going over with legislative finance this morning. There's a $300 million increase in general fund spending from 05 to 06. We're upping our budget by $300 million. Some of that badly needed, some questionable, some in between, as in anything. But to turn around and then cut 37.5 out of local government is impossible to justify to me, is at least hard to justify. Some of the increase went to education, but only about 70 million of it. There's increases all through this budget for ourselves, and then a dramatic decrease to our partners at the local level. I'm not sure how to explain.
Representative Hawker.
Mr. Chairman, Maker of the Amendment, I'm going to support this amendment. And in the context and the understanding that this bill is not moving to the committee today, then there will be time to further address the issues that are being discussed. I think at this point, the technical merits of the amendment, on the sense of a general fund appropriation of 05 general funds, then as juxtaposed against the other larger issues here, other ways of accomplishing the same thing. Got significant interest in seeing the senior and disabilities property tax exemption addressed. I've got significant desires to see municipal dividend subsidy addressed. I've got significant desires to see the fund source involved here addressed. Quite frank with everyone, I think this sort of activity might be a better use of the so-called Amaretta Hess earnings than what's been proposed in other bills before us. To that end, knowing that this amendment forces that debate to be taken to a high level of analysis, consideration by this committee, I think it's going to accomplish a good thing. So to that end, I commend the maker and recognizing that while there's the controversy, and I'd ask folks here with the municipalities to recognize that us today potentially supporting this amendment does not in any way compromise our commitment to work with the communities towards the ends that you're looking for on many fronts. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Chairman, getting my mixed all words up here. You know, I'd sure like to think that with 49 days left in this session, that we would get to something as large as the municipal dividend issue. I hope you guys prove me wrong, but I don't think it's happening. And so I just, and I don't have to tell you guys hear this from your own communities, but those communities out there, we're ripping them apart. It's not going to be too long if we continue down this road. In the smaller communities, we may not have those. And so it's too bad that we have to deal with this one. Thank you.
Representative Mark.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, just a couple comments. Certainly, I'm open to it. Other alternatives that would long-term help our municipalities that are in need help. But again, I think a municipal dividend program or some other program is much better than PERS, especially since we're not funding PERS for K-12. I mean, the municipalities have a sales tax, they have a property tax, they have a bed tax. They have other ways to raise money than just K-12. So I guess I'm just saying, let's be consistent. If we're not going to fund the PERS increase and PERS increase for K-12, then we shouldn't do it for the municipality. And it's the reason why we're not doing it for K-12 is to get them to help us with the solution. And I'm saying, let's do the same thing for municipalities. Let's have them help us find the solution. But again, I'm open to other alternatives. But I do not think, from a technical standpoint, that we should be using the 05 general funds to do this. Again, when this was first thought of or first budgeted, we had $550 million increase. We've already spent the increase, or allocated the increase. So there is no increase, which means now we're going to dip into CDR to pay this. Now, some may say that's okay, but why would you need to dip into your savings account when you've had a year of surplus? So I think there's another solution here. I don't see this as a decrease, or somebody said it's a cut to the municipalities. How can it be a cut when they have never had it? So it's a new program, and the question before us is, do we want to start a new program like this, or should we look for another program or a different way to get there? AMRDS may be a great solution. It warrants more discussion.
Just a quick comment, and I'll climb up, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chairman. you mentioned the tools available to the municipality. They're applying those tools. In the communities that have the ability to raise property taxes or have property taxes, they're there. Those communities, the small communities that have the ability to raise sales taxes, many of them are already doing that. Almost every single village in my district, in the lower half of my district, already doing that. They're strapped.
Representative Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, when I was in front of our local government group, I guess it was the school board actually, and some of the borough folks were there, and city folks. One of the things that they said was, please come home with a long-term PERS-TERS solution. Don't just bring some money for the current problem. Which is what I've been calling the Novocaine route, where we kind of just keep numbing up. So I think that a vote on this could easily be misunderstood as hammering the local governments. If I vote yes on this, it will not be for that reason, but rather to focus attention on the PERS-TERS issue and to cause this body and the other body to focus on it, recognize the problem, and to try to solve it this year, not next year in an election year when chances of any solution that involves any pain or strain whatsoever will be nearly impossible. So I'd just like to mention that because I think the municipalities are expecting both a long-term solution and, as Representatives Croft and Jewell mentioned, some help in the current situation as well. I don't think that Representative Myers' amendment is an amendment which says no on either one of those, but rather attempts to focus, to put the heat down, to bring the point right down on the purchaser's issue. And in this, if that is the spirit of the amendment, and I understand it is, then I'd just like to say that I hope that the municipalities do not perceive either that this is something against them in either the short or the long term, or that the fat lady has even begun to hum the C chord to begin to sing. So,
thank you. I guess would Mr. Ritchie like to say a couple of words about it from an AML standpoint, just briefly, since we've already went on another 45 minutes?
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to make a comment. Both the solution to the purchaser's issues, you know, in terms of coming up with a reasonable fix, and having the legislature with its access to far greater resources than we have are both top priorities of the Alaska Municipal League and of all the municipalities. And I think you'll hear that pretty uniformly from each one of your constituent communities. You know, in terms of working with the legislature, you know, we have been doing that on PERS and PERS. We'll continue doing that. That's a high priority. We are employers, exactly as the state is. And so no matter what happens, that's not going to end. But I just want to stress, I mean, I'm hearing two sides. One is that we may not be able to afford this, and one is we may want to do it another way. You know, obviously we're open to work with the legislature to do it another way, but I do want to say that this is a huge, huge cost issue for municipalities that have been really shouldering a lot of the state's load over the past several years. This is essentially a 5% of salary hit to every municipality this fiscal year, and then a 10% of salary hit to every municipality next year, because it's a cumulative impact. What that means is that a municipality that probably puts 75% of its operating budget into salary would be significant, you know, so you can imagine what that hit is over a two-year period, in addition to losing revenue sharing, cost of fuel, and so on. One item that I think is significant with the cost of fuel is that for every dollar increase in the cost of fuel, the state gets a lot of revenue, about $65 million, but every dollar cost of increase in the price of fuel, every community, every school district, every family, you know, obviously has a big hit in higher costs. So with that, there are going to be significant tax ramifications for the communities that can tax, for the communities that can't tax, and there's a number of those smaller communities, quite a few in the PERS system, 1% of sales tax in these communities might raise $8,000 because they just don't have a big store. They don't have much money. They're doing what they can. And there's been, I know of many, many small communities that have raised their sales taxes. But the ability to overcome a large financial hit, $40,000 revenue sharing, whatever the PERS is, insurance costs and so on, it just isn't feasible for these small communities to take that hit. And so far, according to the state, 9 essentially don't exist as cities anymore. They just walked away. Their debts were so large, they just didn't know what to do. When that happens, ultimately, the impact is going to affect the whole state, because so many of the jobs in the state are transportation jobs, service jobs between communities. So anyway, so it's a large problem. I think the assumption that municipalities can just keep raising property taxes is not a good one. I know we're very close to property tax revolts in a number of communities around the state, not revolts, but initiatives. And so that isn't the best answer for many, many communities.
All right, thanks. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. So what are we talking about? Anyway, are there any other questions or comments on language amendment number one?
Mr. Chairman, we have a brief at ease.
Sure. Brief at ease. Back to order. With that, if no other comments, I will remove my objection to amendment language number one.
I'll object. Don't need to discuss it. We've already
been objected. So if you will take the roll, please.
Representative Hawker?
Yes.
Representative Hyde?
Yes.
Representative Jewell?
No.
Representative Tully?
Yes.
Representative Stoltz?
Yes.
Representative
Myra? No. Representative Kroc?
No.
Representative
Schnell?
Yes.
Representative Meyer?
Yes.
And
7 yeas,
3 nays.
And so with that, we will adopt amendment number, language number one. And now at this time, we will put away House Bill 67. We're going to go back to House Bill 66 and take up the University of Alaska Amendment, which is it U of A number 2? And I believe I will object to it for clarification, but Representative Hawker, I think you got your question answered.
Yes, sir, but I believe we'd have to move this amendment before you can object.
If you would.
Standing in if it's not a problem.
Well,
Representative Weirach,
I moved amendment number 2, didn't withdraw the amendment. Amendment still, motion still on the table. It's just a motion to amend House Bill 67, or 66.
Well, we couldn't take up 66 a while ago.
So,
now we've backed out of 67. We are now into House Bill 66. So if you would propose your amendment, we were out of order a while ago.
With the indulgence of my friend Representative Weirach, I would move amendment U of A number 2 to CS House Bill 66 Finance.
Are there any objections?
And if I just may for the committee, sir.
Representative Hawker?
With apologies, I didn't give you the opportunity to object.
Huh?
I did not give you the opportunity to object to that, sir.
I'll object, so go ahead, Representative Hawker.
I just would like for the committee's reference in the interim here, if checked with Mental Health Trust Association, they concur with the explanation given by University of Alaska. Obviously, it is an appropriate correcting amendment. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. With that, I'll remove my objection. Are there any other objections to amendment U of A number 2? If not, U of A number 2 is adopted, and we will bring the Finance Committee meeting to a close for today. Tomorrow we will be taking up, at this time, both bills, House Bill 66 and House Bill 77, with further amendments as we get them organized and get them put together.
67.
Oh, excuse me, 67 and 66.
Tomorrow?
Tomorrow, 1:30, I believe. Unless you're going to be gone, then we'll just cancel the whole thing. With that, we'll bring the meeting to a close, and thanks for attending.